is one of those times I have to make an exception.
That's what I thought.
Walt disappeared. Now alone in the kitchen, Danielle put her feet up on the empty chair across from her at the table. About to finish the rest of her tea, she noticed the space behind the chair she currently used as a footstool darken, as if someone had turned off the kitchen light, illuminating just that space. Hastily removing her feet from the chair, she sat up straight, pushed the teacup aside, and stared at the darkening spot. Her eyes widened as it darkened a few shades more before it brightened again, as if someone were fiddling with a dimmer switch. In the next moment, an apparition appeared. It was Lucas. He stood just 5 feet from her. "Oh, my God," Danielle murmured. Stumbling to her feet, she stood up, her gaze locked with his.
"It's really you, isn't it?" Lucas asked in awe.
"I believe that's my line. What are you doing here?" Danielle stood behind the chair she had moments earlier been sitting on, gripping its back.
"I never truly believed you. You can really see people like me, can't you?"
"People like you? You really aren't a person anymore, Lucas. I asked you, what are you doing here?"
"I don't remember you being cruel, Danielle. I know I have a lot to explain, but I thought at least a part of you would be happy to see me."
"You've been gone for almost 14 months now, Lucas. I would have expected to see you months ago, not now. Where have you been?"
"So that's it," Lucas smiled. "You're upset I didn't come sooner."
"No, that's not it. It's just that if you were to show yourself to me, I expected it to happen months ago. Maybe at your funeral?"
Lucas shook his head. "I missed my funeral. Were many people there?"
"Yes," Danielle said without emotion.
"My mother. How was she? This must have devastated her."
"Yes, it did."
"She adored you," Lucas told her. "I hope you've kept in contact. I know that would mean so much to her."
"Honestly, I haven't seen or talked to your mother in months. We really have nothing to talk about."
"I need to explain things," Lucas said.
"Explain where you've been. This is confusing to me."
"I thought you told me you've been seeing spirits all your life."
"I have, but not after they've moved on. I assumed you had moved on."
"Moved on? Ah, yes. Megan explained that to me."
"Who's Megan?"
"She's like you, I suppose. She found me. I'd been wandering around in a building since it happened. Since the accident."
"What building?" Danielle frowned.
"Just a commercial building not far from where I had the accident. I went in there looking for someone to help me, but no one could see or hear me. No one until Megan found me. Helped me."
"I don't understand how you found me."
"Megan helped me track you down. She used the internet. Told me you were using your maiden name." "That hurt, Danielle. To think you didn't keep my name."
"You hurt me, Lucas."
"I'm sorry about that, but I can explain."
In the next moment, Chris barged into the kitchen.
"Danielle, I was wondering..."
He froze when he spied Lucas standing by the table with Danielle. Lucas turned toward Chris and looked at him. In the next moment, he vanished.
"I appreciate you coming in, Joanne," Joe Morelli told Joanne Johnson as he brought her into his office.
"Danielle called me this morning, told me not to come in for work, explained what had happened. I still can't believe it."
Joanne shook her head.
"It does seem Marlowe House is cursed."
"I'll admit it has had more than its share of trouble."
"I wanted to ask you a few questions."
"Certainly, Joe."
"Have you ever seen Peter Morris at Marlowe House?"
Joanne considered the question a moment and then said, "The only time I can recall was at Danielle's Christmas Eve party.
She wasn't thrilled he showed up, but I believe one of her guests, Richard Winston, invited him. Of course, we all know how that turned out.
What do you mean, how that turned out?
Mr. Morris's right-hand man tried to murder Mr. Winston just days later. Danielle believes Mr. Morris was behind the assassination attempt. But, of course, nothing could be proved, not with Cleve Moncheek's handwritten confession. What do you think of Chris Johnson?
Chris? He's a likable young man, but I haven't spent that much time with him.
Danielle told me Chris keeps his tackle box on the back porch.
Have you seen it?
Of course. My duties include cleaning the back porch. I wasn't particularly happy when he put it out there. Each time I sweep, I have to move it. But Danielle set it on a bench under the overhang because of all the rain. Why are you asking about the tackle box?
It's my understanding Danielle gave Chris a fishing knife that he used to keep in his tackle box.
Joanne smiled. That's normally where one keeps fishing knives.
Are you familiar with the knife Danielle gave him?
She shook her head. I had no idea Danielle had given him a fishing knife.
According to Chris, he kept the knife in the tackle box on the back porch. But the last time he looked in the box, the knife was missing. Have you ever seen anyone other than Chris get into that tackle box?
No, but...
Joanne frowned. Is there something you remember? Joe asked.
Are you trying to figure out where the fishing knife is?
Actually, we have the knife. We're just trying to determine who removed it from the tackle box.
Joanne smiled weakly. Well, I guess that would be me. 18. Kelly Bartley sat alone in the Frederickport Police Department's interrogation room. She had been waiting for over 15 minutes to be interviewed. Glancing to the mirror on the far wall, she remembered what Danielle had once told her. It was a two-way mirror. She wondered if someone was watching her. Shifting nervously in the chair, she regretted not stopping first at Ian's house and picking up her brother. Instead, she had driven directly from Astoria to the police station. She was considering standing up and pacing the room to burn off nervous energy when the door opened and Joe Morelli walked in.
"Hi, Joe. I was wondering if you'd forgotten about me."
She smiled.
"Kelly, we appreciate you coming in."
Joe sat down across from her. "Ian called me earlier today and told me what happened to Mr. Morris. He asked me to call the station and talk to Brian Henderson to let him know I'd left Ian's house around the time you think Mr. Morris was murdered. I did try calling, but they told me Officer Henderson had left for the day."
"Did you leave a message? Ask to talk to someone else?"
Kelly shrugged. "No, I just figured that since I really didn't see anything, it wasn't urgent. I was going to try calling again in the morning." Resting his right hand atop the closed manila folder, Joe looked across the table at Kelly.
"Why don't you tell me about last night, from when you left your brother's house and got into your car to leave?"
"There really isn't much to say. I've been helping him do some internet research on his current project."
"The piece on earthbound spirits and Peter Morris?"
She nodded. "Yes. After Cleve Moncheek's attempt on Mr. Winston's life, and then when nothing happened to earthbound spirits after Moncheek's suicide, my brother decided to research the group and write an expose."
"So what time did you leave your brother's house?"
"I honestly don't know. I remember looking at the clock around 11:30 and saying we needed to wrap it up. I was planning to stay with a friend for the weekend in Astoria, so we finished up. I tossed my stuff in a suitcase and left."
"Do you have any idea what time that was?"
"I didn't really pay any attention to the clock after that, but it was probably 30 minutes or maybe an hour or more later by the time I left."
"That's rather a big difference. 30 minutes opposed to over an hour."
She shrugged again. I sometimes lose track of time. Ask my brother. I get doing stuff, tell him I'll be 10 minutes, and then when I finally show up, it's maybe an hour later. I'm sorry, if I'd known the exact time would be important, I would have paid more attention to the clock. When you left, did your brother walk you to your car?
No, he was in the shower when I left. I'd already said goodbye to him.
So when you went outside, did you go directly to your car?
Kelly frowned.
What do you mean? Maybe you took Sadie out, walked around the yard, looked over to Marlowe House. Maybe you saw some cars on the street.
I honestly didn't pay that much attention. I just got into my car and left. I didn't notice any strange cars parked on the street.
Kelly, did you bring a coat with you?
Coat? Well, sure, it's been cold.
Does your coat have a hood?
Instead of answering immediately, Kelly stared at Joe. Finally, she said, "Sure, it's a raincoat."
And did you have that coat on last night when you left your brother's house to go home?
Kelly shifted nervously in the chair. What's this about, Joe?
I think you need to tell me what really happened between the time you stepped out of your brother's house and got into your car last night. Although technically, it was early this morning.
Looking down at the table, she closed her eyes.
That person? The one who almost hit me?
Kelly Bartley, did you kill Peter Morris?
Kelly's eyes flew open and her head snapped up. She looked into Joe's dark eyes.
Is that what you're thinking? Good Lord, Joe! Of course I didn't kill him.
Then I think you need to tell me what exactly happened last night.
Kelly let out a deep sigh before proceeding. Last night, while I was putting my suitcase and things into my car, I looked across the street and noticed a light on in the parlor of Marlowe House. I had intended to stop and say hi to Danielle while I was here, but I never got around to it. So I decided to run over real quick, see if she was the one in the parlor so I could surprise her and say hi. I knew it was late, but it sounded, well, like a good idea at the time.
What happened?
By the time I got over there, someone had turned off one of the lights in the parlor.
What do you mean, one of the lights?
When I first looked over, the parlor window was lit up, like the overhead light was on. But when I got across the street, it looked pretty dark downstairs. But there was still some light coming from the parlor. I looked in the window. There was a nightlight on.
Was anyone in the room?
I saw what looked like a silhouette of a man. I figured it was probably one of Danielle's guests, and I started feeling like a peeping Tom. So I ran back across the street. When I did, I almost got hit by a car. I was so frazzled and embarrassed from peeking into Marlowe House's window, I didn't see the car coming. It stopped. I ran to my car, got in, and left.
Did you see any other cars parked on the street?
No, I'm sorry. I really was not paying attention.
Have you ever met Peter Morris?
No, I've never met him.
Are you sure? Not even at Danielle's Christmas Eve party. You were both there, I remember.
Kelly shook her head. No, I didn't want to meet him.
Why was that? Joe asked.
Because. Kelly took a deep breath. Peter Morris arrived at the party around the same time I was walking across the street from Ian's. I was on my way over to the party when I saw him drive up. I recognized him. I didn't want him to spoil Christmas Eve, so I waited until he went into the house, and then I went over and avoided him, making sure I stayed away from the man.
That's quite a reaction for a person you've never met.
I didn't have to meet the man personally to know what a piece of garbage he was. I suppose I should say I'm sorry he's dead, but I'm not. I hope he went straight to hell where he belongs.
Joe studied Kelly, surprised by her outburst.
Kelly, I think you need to tell me why you had such a strong dislike for Peter Morris.
Tears filled Kelly's eyes. Biting her lower lip in an attempt to stem the flow of tears, she shook her head.
It will all be in my brother's article. You can read about it there.
Setting his elbows on the table, he leaned forward, his voice low.
No, Kelly, I need you to tell me now. Why did you have such a personal dislike of Peter Morris, so much so that you didn't want to run into him at Danielle's party?
Wiping away her unshed tears, Kelly took a deep breath, attempting to calm herself. Peter Morris killed my best friend.
Excuse me?
Well, he didn't pull the trigger exactly, but he might as well have.
Why don't you start at the beginning? Joe suggested.
Candace and I went to high school together. During college, we were roommates. She was a sweet girl, but she had some emotional issues. After a particularly painful breakup with a boyfriend, she started looking for answers.
Looking for answers?
A lot of people do it. Life starts to throw nothing but hardballs, and you figure religion will give some meaning to it all. She started searching for answers. Like, why did her boyfriend leave her? Why was her mother such a Looney Tune? Why did her grandmother have to die? Unfortunately, she went to earthbound spirits for the answers.
How did your friend die?
She overdosed. It was intentional. She left a farewell note, an odd handwritten suicide note.
What do you mean, odd? Joe asked.
Odd? It said something like, don't cry for me. It was my idea to do this, no one else's. Goodbye.
What was Peter Morris's part in this?
I knew she had gotten involved with some church. That's what she called it. I assumed it was a Christian church. I had no idea at the time it was earthbound spirits. I wasn't really concerned when she first got involved with them, because she seemed content, at peace, which was saying something for Candace.
What happened?
A day before she killed herself, we got a little drunk. I had no idea at the time it was her going away party to herself. We were both pretty wasted when she started giggling and told me she was going to miss me, but that we'd see each other someday. I asked her what she was talking about. She told me her spiritual advisor had told her it was time for her to move on, time to leave this world. I asked her what she meant, but she just started giggling again. I figured she was just wasted.
Did she say who her spiritual advisor was?
No, but the next day I slept in, and when I woke up, I went to check on Candace. She was dead. I found the note.
When did you find out she'd been involved with earthbound spirits?
I just found out before Christmas. It had been years since her death. I thought she had just had some sort of mental breakdown. Like I said, she always had some issues. But in November, I ran into her sister, Bailey. I hadn't seen her since Candace's funeral. We went out to lunch, started talking about Candace, and it all came out.
Joe quietly listened to what Kelly had to say. Candace came from a very wealthy family. I always thought her mom was sort of nuts and her father was too busy making money to notice what was going on around him. Mrs. Bradford, Candace's mother, was one of those people who obsessed over what the world thought of her, of her family. After Candace died, the money she had inherited from her grandmother was left to earthbound spirits.
So Candace had her own money?
Yeah. Candace was always close to her grandmother. When the woman died, she left a couple million to each of her granddaughters, Candace and Bailey.
Did her parents contest the will?
I suppose they could have, even though Candace was of legal age to leave her money to whomever she wanted to. But a couple million was not that big a deal to the Bradfords. What was a big deal was letting the world know their daughter had gotten tied up with that crazy group. It was bad enough their daughter committed suicide. They did all they could to keep the entire thing a secret, even signing an agreement with Earthbound Spirits not to contest the will, providing the group didn't publicize the fact that Candace had left them her estate. I'd no idea Candace was that involved with Earthbound Spirits. Not until Bailey told me in November. Why would her sister tell you now? For one thing, Bailey never knew. Not until her mother died and she came across the written agreement between Earthbound Spirits and her parents. Their father died a few years after Candace. But their mother, she passed away just a few weeks before I ran into Bailey in November. Bailey had just found out the truth, needed to talk to someone, happened to run into me, and she knew I loved Candace.
What did she tell you about Peter Morris?
Nothing specific. Of course, I already knew about the group. I didn't tell Ian immediately. Well, at the time, I didn't really think there was anything I could do. And in some ways, I was dealing with Candace's death all over again. But when Ian decided to do an expose on Earthbound Spirits, I told him what I knew. And when we started digging into it, I found some people who knew Candace back then who were in the group. And they told me Peter Morris was Candace's spiritual advisor.
Why didn't you or Ian come to us with what you knew? Especially after Cleve's suicide.
We would have. Eventually. 19. Can I go now? Kelly asked. I've really told you all I know, which isn't much.
Joe's hand toyed with the upper right-hand corner of the manila folder, preparing to open it.
Why did you lie about going over to Marlowe House before you left your brother's?
Slumping back in her chair, Kelly let out a sigh. I didn't lie, exactly. I just sort of left out that part.
A significant part.
She sat up straighter and looked at Joe. Why? I didn't see anything, honest. It was dark when I got over there, and I'm not even positive if it was a man or woman I saw in the parlor.
I still don't understand why you didn't tell me, unless...
I didn't want to get involved, okay? Kelly snapped.
What do you mean you didn't want to get involved?
Since I've been helping Ian research Earthbound Spirits, the more I learn about the group, well, they sort of scare me. They kill people. I just figure whoever murdered Peter is probably someone from the inside. A lot of money is at stake. Now with Cleve gone, Morris was vulnerable.
I thought you believed Morris was behind Cleve's death.
Yes, I think he got Cleve to kill himself, just like he did with Candace. But with Cleve, I suspect Peter began to realize he acted rashly, because with Cleve gone, there was no one who had his back. Although, I'm not sure he could have done anything differently. I mean, from Peter's perspective. From what we've learned in our research, the group seems to be unraveling.
What does any of that have to do with you not telling me the truth about going over to Marlowe House last night?
Don't you see maybe the killer was in the room when I looked in? Maybe he had just killed Peter right before I peeked in. If he thinks someone saw him, if it gets out that I looked in the window last night... I may be the next person on the killer's list. If I'd seen something, something that would really help you, I would have already told you. But I didn't. But the killer doesn't know that.
You knew someone saw you. The car that almost hit you.
Yes, but it was just a car driving down the street, and I assumed it was unrelated to the murder. When Ian called me, told me about the murderer... He asked me what I'd seen.
I didn't even tell him about me going over there. What was the point? And I figured if I told Ian, he would probably tell Lily. I like Lily, but I really wouldn't trust her with my secrets. So I hoped the driver of the car never realized they'd driven by a crime scene, and then no one would have to know I'd looked in that damn window. Joe didn't respond. Instead, he silently studied Kelly, his fingers still fiddling with the folder's edge. After a few moments of silence, Kelly looked up into Joe's eyes and asked again, "Can I go now?"
"Not quite yet."
Joe opened the folder and pulled out a photograph. He set it before Kelly.
"Do you know this man?"
Kelly's eyes visibly widened when her gaze set on the photograph. Nervously chewing her bottom lip, she looked from the picture to Joe. "Yes? Why are you showing me this?"
"Who is he?" Joe asked.
Kelly shrugged. "It's Mitch."
"What's your relationship with him?"
Kelly shook her head. "I don't have a relationship with him. He lives in a condo below mine."
"Are you friends?" he asked.
"Not exactly. He's just a neighbor. I'm not even sure I ever knew his last name."
Joe smiled and removed a second photograph from the envelope. "Oh, you do."
He placed the second photograph on top of the first one. Kelly let out a gasp and snatched up the picture Joe had just placed before her. Holding it in her hand, she looked from the picture to Joe. "Where did you get this?"
The photograph was of her and Mitch. "That doesn't matter right now, but you look like more than casual neighbors in that picture."
Kelly shook her head and tossed the picture onto the table. "I don't understand what Mitch has to do with this. Why are you showing me these pictures?"
"This morning, during our processing of the crime scene, we found a fingerprint, a bloody fingerprint, on Marlowe House's front gate. The fingerprint belongs to your friend Mitch, and we are fairly certain the blood belongs to Peter Morris. We should know that sometime tomorrow."
"Mitch?" Kelly pressed her right hand against her brow. She began to rub her now-throbbing head and closed her eyes. "No, this can't be happening. It doesn't make any sense."
"Now, maybe you might want to tell me again. What's your relationship with Mitch?"
Kelly stopped rubbing her forehead and opened her eyes. She stared at Joe, her expression unreadable. "I told you, he is just a neighbor. We have a very casual relationship. I don't even know his last name."
"You don't look very casual in that photograph. Practically cheek to cheek."
"It was a stupid selfie Mitch took. I ran into him at the Starbucks down the street from my condo. This was about a month ago, right after he moved in. He started up a conversation, and I recognized him as my new neighbor. As we're talking, all of a sudden he grabs his phone, tells me he wants to take my picture. And before I know it, he practically knocks my head with his while he takes the picture. That's about the extent of our friendship."
"You never went out again?"
"Technically speaking, we didn't go out that day. We simply ran into each other at the coffee shop."
"So is that a yes or no?"
"No, we never went out, ever."
"Did you ever run into him again, like you did that day? Maybe at Starbucks or some other place?"
"I saw him a few times at Starbucks, but I never sat with him again. We said hello. That was it. The baristas there know me. You can ask them. They can tell you we didn't hang out there together."
"Did you ever go to his apartment? Did he ever go to yours?"
"No." Kelly paused a moment, rethinking his question. "Well, actually, he did come into my place a couple times, but it wasn't like we were hanging out together or anything. A few times he helped me bring up my groceries."
Well, that was neighborly of him.
It's not like he always helped me with my groceries, but our parking spots are next to each other, and a couple times he pulled in at the same time I got back from the grocery store, so he'd offer to help me bring my groceries up. I have those stairs, but he never stayed. We never went out or anything.
Do you know what he does for a living? Joe asked.
Kelly shook her head. I don't know. We never talked about it. Like I said, the only time we really talked was at the Starbucks that one time when he took that selfie. And then the conversation was just silly. We didn't really share any personal information other than first names.
Silly. How?
Oh, I don't know. We talked about the high price of coffee, speculated on why Starbucks doesn't use small, medium, and large, that sort of stuff.
Do you know of any connection between him and earthbound spirits?
No, and I find it hard to believe there is one. He didn't seem like someone who would get involved with a group like that.
Cocking her head slightly, she looked at Joe.
Are you sure it was Mitch's fingerprint on that gate?
Did you know he was in Frederickport yesterday? Joe asked.
No. What does he say about all this?
I don't know. Your neighbor seems to be missing. He wasn't at his home this afternoon, and he wasn't at his office.
His office? I don't know where he works. Where's that?
Downtown Portland.
None of this makes any sense.
Kelly picked up the photograph of her and Mitch and stared at it. The door to the office opened, and another officer walked in. He silently handed Joe a piece of paper and then left the room. Kelly looked up and watched the officer leave, wondering what Joe had been handed. In the next moment, she had her answer.
Kelly, I have a warrant here to search your car.
Ian anxiously paced the living room of Marlowe House while Lily, Danielle, and Chris silently watched from where they sat. Lily on the recliner and Chris and Danielle on the sofa. Walt observed from his place by the fireplace. Earlier, Chris had built a fire. The flames flickered and snapped from the hearth. David and Arlene had gone out for dinner, and Heather had finally returned. She was upstairs in her room. Ian looked at his watch again.
What's taking Kelly so long? I'd call the chief again, but I'm sure he's gone home by now, Danielle told him.
Want me to call down there again? Lily offered.
No.
Ian sat down on the arm of Lily's recliner.
The last time I called, they said she was still in the interview room with Joe.
That can't be good, Walt said from his place by the fire.
Both Danielle and Chris glanced over at him.
Well, it can't, Walt reiterated. We all know Joe has an overactive imagination and a penchant for trying to pin crimes on attractive young women.
Danielle flashed Walt a frown.
It's true, she is an attractive young woman.
Walt then turned his attention to Chris.
You know, Chris, I've said all along Kelly was perfect for you. And tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Since Kelly will probably be here for Valentine's Day, can't imagine she'll head out tonight. You should really think about asking her out for tomorrow. Might help Ian and Lily, too. From what I understand, Ian was planning some romantic dinner at his house, and with his sister now back in town, it might spoil his Valentine's Day plans. A win-win for both of you.
Walt smiled. The doorbell rang. Ian jumped up from the sofa.
Maybe that's her.
He dashed from the room to answer the front door. When Ian returned to the living room, a weary Kelly by his side, Danielle thought Ian's sister looked as if she hadn't slept in days.
They searched my car.
Kelly burst out in tears.
You let them search your car? Why? Chris asked.
They had a search warrant.
Kelly used the back of her hand to wipe away the tears. Ian led her to a chair. She sat down and then proceeded to tell them everything that had happened.
Well, they didn't find anything, and they let you go. So that's good, isn't it? Lily said.
No longer crying, Kelly sniffled.
But they kept my coat. It's the one I got for Christmas.
I'm sure you'll get it back, Ian said.
I just hope they don't ruin it while checking to see if there's some trace evidence of blood. As if I would actually cut a man's throat.
I just wish you would have been up front with me when I asked you what you saw last night. Then we could have avoided all this, Ian said.
In fairness to Kelly, Danielle reminded him, you're the one who withheld information from the police first, not your sister.
I still can't believe it was Mitch's fingerprint.
Kelly shook her head.
And you know what? His name isn't even Mitch.
He lied to you about his name? Lily asked.
Not exactly. His real name is Logan Mitchum, but he goes by Mitch.
Logan Mitchum? Danielle asked.
Why does that name sound familiar? 20. Logan Mitchum. That's the name of the private detective Will Wayne hired to look into Isabella's death, Danielle said, when she finally made the connection. Is this neighbor of yours a PI? Kelly shrugged.
I have no idea. Joe didn't say what Mitch does for a living, and I was so frazzled I didn't even think to ask. Although now that I think about it, he asked me what Mitch does for a living, but since he said something about checking Mitch's office, I figured he already knew. He was just trying to see what I'd say.
You think it's the same Mitchum? Chris asked.
Kelly frowned. Wait a minute. Why would Will Wayne hire a detective to look into his daughter's death? She died of a brain aneurysm. Ian and I haven't come across anything that would indicate foul play. The medical records were pretty clear. Can someone induce an aneurysm, like a heart attack?
This all stems from some phone call Will received. He asked me not to say anything to the police until he found out more. But considering what's going on, I think I should talk to the chief.
Danielle stood up. Do you think your Logan Mitchum could be a PI?
He is hardly my Logan Mitchum. Heck, I didn't even know him by that name. And frankly, I would prefer to distance myself from him, especially if he killed Peter Morris.
Kelly then looked at her brother in a panic. They haven't found him yet. I can't go home until they do. What if he thinks I saw something? That I'm a witness?
You can stay with me, Kelly, Ian told her.
We could go in the parlor, Danielle told the chief, as she led him into the library 30 minutes later. But I really don't feel comfortable going back in there.
I can't say I blame you, the chief said, as he took a seat.
He watched Danielle shut the library door. You look tired, she noted.
You too. He smiled wearily. It's been a long day.
I wanted to talk to you about Logan Mitchum. Danielle sat down.
Ah, I see Kelly has talked to you already.
She stopped here after she left the police station.
Is she still here? I didn't look in the living room when I came in. Can't imagine she'd be in the parlor.
No, she went across the street with Lily and Ian. By her appearance, Joe was pretty rough on her.
Joe was doing his job, and she was being less than forthcoming.
I want to know, is Logan Mitchum a private investigator? The chief smiled.
So Kelly was lying about that, too.
Lying about what? Danielle frowned.
When Joe asked her what he did for a living, she said she didn't know. We figured, if nothing else, she and Ian had hired Mitchum in the past.
No, Kelly didn't know what he does for a living. And Ian had never heard of him before. He'd never even noticed the guy when he stopped by his sister's.
Then how do you know he's a PI?
Because Will Wayne told me he hired a PI to investigate Isabella's death. And the detective he hired was some guy by the name Logan Mitchum. I wanted to know if it was the same man.
Why would Will hire a PI? Isabella died of natural causes.
Danielle told McDonald about running into Will Wayne when visiting Portland in January. How Wayne had told her about the phone calls and the suspicion surrounding his daughter's death.
I really wish Will had come to me. That call was a hoax. Not sure why someone would do that, but I've no doubt the only thing criminals surrounding Isabella's death were her uncle's actions after she was already dead. But this does add new names to my suspect list.
Certainly you don't think Will had anything to do with the murder. He hired Mitchum to investigate Morris, not kill him.
I'll need to talk to Will, see what he knows.
What does Mitchum say? According to Kelly, he wasn't at his condo or office. Have you located him?
Not yet. Brian drove to Portland this afternoon. When he got there, Mitchum wasn't at his condo or office. No one had seen him since yesterday morning. But we have someone watching the place and his office.
When I talked to you earlier, you told me Brian had gone home to sleep, that he'd had a long day. McDonald shrugged.
He did have a long day. I just figured it was easier to tell you he went home instead of trying to explain why he took off to Portland in the middle of an investigation. You have to understand, there will always be some things I simply cannot tell you. Nothing personal, Danielle.
Well, I'll remember that when I know something.
McDonald laughed. You mean like knowing Will hired a detective to investigate Morris and believes Isabella was murdered? Which, if true, could mean there was corruption in the coroner's office.
Danielle sighed.
Okay, you got me there, but I didn't really think the PI would find anything, and I certainly never imagined the PI's fingerprint would show up at a crime scene on my property. I just hope we find him soon, and that he has some answers for us.
Me too. Kelly's afraid to go home. She's paranoid about living next to a possible murderer, especially considering she was over here last night peeking in the windows.
So she told you everything?
Danielle nodded. Yep, she was pretty freaked.
Any chance that you, Chris, or Walt might have run into Morris's spirit since the last time we talked? It would make it a lot easier on me if he'd simply name his killer.
Sorry, the last time Walt saw Morris's spirit was when they were taking his body away. He went with it, so I suspect if he hasn't moved on, he might be hanging around the morgue.
Any chance you might be willing to go to the morgue with me?
No, nada, ain't happening. Nope.
Well,
McDonald stood up.
If you change your mind. Oh, how about that second spirit? You still say it's your late husband?
It is, but I haven't really talked to him either. He just sort of shows up and then vanishes.
Considering that, I suppose I understand your reluctance about going down to the morgue with me. You have your hands full.
Danielle stood up. Oh, I just remembered. But considering you have the fingerprint, this isn't that big a deal.
You remembered what?
According to Max.
McDonald arched his brows. Max, your cat?
Yes. Sweet black furry little guy, white-tipped ears, likes to chew on your fingers.
Yes, I'm familiar with a little demon.
Ah, that's not nice. Plus, he has information for you.
I'm not quite sure if I'll ever get used to the idea of getting tips from ghosts. But a cat? That one always makes me stop and wonder if I'm losing my mind.
Well, you're not. And if it makes you feel any better, it's not like Max talked to you, or even me, for that matter. It's just that thing between spirits and animals.
Okay, what information does Max have?
Last night, after Heather came upstairs to go to bed, Max saw Arlene slip out of her bedroom. This was after Heather went into her bedroom and closed her door. Arlene went downstairs.
Where was Chris?
I'm pretty sure he was in the kitchen about that time, looking for me, because a few minutes later, Chris came upstairs. According to Max, he walked to my bedroom door, but then looked as if he had had second thoughts, so he went back downstairs.
Wouldn't Chris have seen Arlene downstairs?
I didn't ask Chris or Arlene about it, but I don't think he saw her, or else he would have said something.
When did Arlene come back upstairs? The chief asked.
I don't know. Max went up to the attic after Chris headed back downstairs.
I wonder why Arlene didn't say anything about going downstairs, the chief murmured.
I wondered that myself, but this was late, after midnight. It's always possible Arlene was half asleep when she got up, was thirsty, and maybe doesn't even remember going downstairs.
And avoided running into Chris?
It's possible, but I guess you can ask her about it. But like I said, now that you have that fingerprint, I don't really think it's anything significant. And plus, how do you ask her? I mean, you really can't say, according to the cat. When Lily returned from Ian's house later that evening, Marlowe House was locked up and the only illumination came from nightlights plugged into random sockets throughout the house. Tiptoeing past the parlor, she noticed the door was shut. Just looking at it gave her chills. Chris's door was also shut. She knew he had decided to spend one final night at Marlowe House and start moving into his new place in the morning. Upstairs, all the doors were closed, and there was no light coming from under any of the doors, except for Danielle's. Danielle was still up. Instead of knocking on Danielle's door and risking waking up Heather and the others, Lily used her cell phone to send Danielle a text message. A moment later, Danielle's bedroom door opened, and Lily went inside.
"I thought for sure you'd be sound asleep by now," Lily whispered.
She sat with Danielle on the edge of the mattress. After coming home from the police station earlier, Danielle had finally made her bed. She hadn't yet turned down the sheets and blankets for the night.
"I was hoping you'd come in here before you went to bed. We haven't had a chance to be alone since all of this happened."
"I can't believe they kept us apart all morning and wouldn't even let us talk to each other," Lily said.
"I guess they couldn't risk us comparing notes.
After all, maybe the five of us killed Morris.
Like one of those old mysteries where all the suspects are guilty?"
"Pretty much." Danielle glanced around the room.
"You looking for Walt? Is he here?"
"No. I'm looking for Lucas."
"Lucas? What are you talking about?"
"I saw Lucas today. Walt saw him first. The second spirit I told you about, it wasn't someone connected to Peter's murder like we assumed. Just some bizarre coincidence."
"I don't understand. Lucas has been dead for over a year."
Danielle explained to Lily what she knew about Lucas's spirit, beginning when Walt first encountered him before Morris's body was found. When Danielle finished, Lily said,
"Oh, my God! Of all times for your deceased husband to show up on Valentine's Day."
"Technically speaking, he showed up on Friday the 13th, Danielle reminded her. Lily started to giggle.
"What is so funny?"
"Sorry, I couldn't help it.
ironic in a twisted sick sort of way. Lucas showing up, sort of a Friday the 13th Valentine's Day surprise.
You have a strange sense of humor, Danielle said with a sigh. 21. Dressed in her plaid pajama bottoms and oversized red t-shirt, Danielle sat in the center of her bed, her bent knees pulled up to her chest as she protectively wrapped her arms around them. Resting her chin atop her knees, she gazed across the dimly lit room. Lily had turned the overhead light off when she had left, but there was some moonlight coming through the bedroom window. When coming upstairs earlier, Danielle had asked Walt not to come into her bedroom to say goodnight or chat. She suspected Lucas wouldn't appear again if he or anyone else was with her. Unable to stifle a yawn, Danielle glanced over to the nightstand and looked at the clock. She had been sitting alone on the bed for almost 30 minutes.
"Lucas, can you hear me? Are you nearby?" Danielle asked out loud.
"Please, let's get this over with. Tell me why you came so you can move on. This is unbearable, wondering if you're going to show up at any moment." The room was silent, and then she heard it, soft pawing on the door. "Oh, Max," Danielle mumbled, climbing off her bed. Walking to the door, she opened it, letting in the cat, who immediately began weaving in and out between her legs. She shut the door. "For a while there, I thought you intended to hang out all night with Walt." Reaching down, she picked up the black cat and carried him over to the bed, placing him on the foot of the mattress. She pulled down the blankets and climbed under the bedding. Purring, Max strolled up the bed and curled up beside her.
"You have a cat?" Lucas said.
He stood next to the bed, looking down at her. Danielle bolted to a sitting position. "You're here."
"Finding you alone has been a challenge."
Max lifted his head and stared at the apparition. A gurgling growl, one he normally reserved for expressing his opinion of other cats, replaced the purr. Cocking his head slightly, Lucas looked inquisitively at the unhappy cat.
"You don't like me."
Snatching up the snarling animal, Danielle climbed out of bed.
"Sorry, Max. I need to talk to Lucas alone."
After depositing Max in the hallway, she shut the door and faced her husband's ghost.
"I could understand what that cat was thinking," Lucas said in awe.
"Why did you come? Why now?"
Lucas glanced around the room.
"I don't understand why you're here. Why Oregon? Why this house? Are you an innkeeper?"
"I own a bed and breakfast," she explained. Lucas sat on the edge of the bed, looking up at Danielle.
"Why a bed and breakfast? Why Oregon?"
"My great aunt died and left me this house. I decided to turn it into a bed and breakfast," she explained.
"What about your marketing degree? What about our business?"
"I needed a change. I sold the business."
Abruptly, Lucas stood.
"You sold it? How could you just sell it? We worked so hard. It was our dream."
"You weren't here anymore, Lucas. I needed to move on."
"But you are fully capable of running the business, of growing it into what we always imagined. You just walked away from all that we built?"
"Lucas, you walked away from us before I ever considered selling the business."
"You're angry with me, I understand. I suppose I deserve that."
"I've gotten over it. You can go now."
"I'm not ready to go, Danielle. I have too many questions. There are things I need to explain."
Weary, Danielle walked over to the love seat and sat down. Lucas followed her. He stood before the unlit fireplace.
"I'm sorry. I never truly believed you could see ghosts. Is that what I am now, a ghost?"
"Well, I suppose that's one definition. Some prefer spirit to ghost."
"Who's the one that looks like he just stepped out of an episode of Boardwalk Empire?"
"You mean Walt?"
I think so.
Walt Marlowe, his grandfather built this house, Danielle explained.
He's like me, isn't he? He's a ghost.
Walt prefers the term spirit, but yes.
Why is he here? Why hasn't he moved on?
Walt has his reasons.
He was in your bedroom. I saw him cover you up.
I guess he figured I was cold.
I don't understand. How did he lift the blankets? I've tried to move things, but all I end up doing is tipping stuff over, making something move that I don't want to move.
It's about harnessing your energy. But, Lucas, I don't believe spirits are supposed to stay on this plane. They're supposed to move on. You're supposed to move on.
That's what Megan said, Lucas mumbled.
It sounds like your spirit got stuck after you died, which sometimes happens with a sudden, unexpected death. But now things have become clearer. You can focus on reality.
He frowned. How do you know that?
Because that's what happens. That's what I've learned over the years. It's pretty obvious to me that after you came to terms with your death, you felt compelled to seek me out. Here I am, but there's really nothing for either of us to say. At least not now. I've moved on, and so should you.
No, Danielle. Something is keeping me here. I can feel it. I can't leave yet. There's something I need to do.
Danielle considered his words a moment. When Walt first saw you, he didn't know who you were. He thought you were in some way involved with Peter Morris.
The man who was murdered downstairs?
How did you know his name?
He told me.
What do you mean, he told you? I don't believe Peter Morris could see or hear spirits.
No, it was afterwards, after he stepped out of his body.
You saw his spirit leave his body? Danielle asked.
I was trying to find you. I could sense this was where you'd be, somewhere in this house. But then I saw the two men in the front room arguing. A man sitting in a chair, who I later learned was Peter Morris, and the other man, the killer.
What were they arguing about?
I don't really know. I didn't care. They weren't talking very loud. They were whispering, but I could tell they were angry.
Did you hear anything they said?
Not really. I wanted to find you. So I went through the rest of the rooms on the first floor. Before going upstairs, I went back to the front room. The men were still there.
Was the light on? Danielle asked.
Only a night light. Just as the man walked behind Peter, he took out a gun.
A gun? Danielle frowned. Morris wasn't killed by a gun.
For a moment, I thought he was going to shoot Peter. But then something got his attention. Something sitting on the shelf. I didn't know what it was at first, but he slipped the gun back into his pocket and kept talking in a whisper. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I wasn't close enough, but I could tell Peter was laughing at whatever it was. I thought it was bizarre.
Bizarre? How?
Peter seemed oblivious to any danger. When the man pulled the gun out of his pocket, I was sure he intended to shoot Peter in the back. But then Peter laughed, and the man put the gun back in his pocket. I figured Peter must have said something that made the man change his mind. I was just about to leave and go upstairs to look for you when the man grabbed something from the shelf. It was a knife.
It was the fishing knife. The one they found in the bathroom, Danielle murmured. Chris's knife.
It happened so fast, like the man knew exactly what he was doing. Peter never saw it coming. I just stood there and watched as he stepped out of his body and looked down at himself. His killer shoved the dead body with his foot, and it just fell onto the throw rug by the sofa. I thought for a moment he was going to use the rug to wrap up the body and dispose of it, but he just left the room.
What did the killer look like?
There wasn't much light, but he was a stocky man about my age. I followed the killer out of the room and watched him go into the bathroom. Peter was still stumbling around his dead body, trying to figure out what had just happened.
"He hid the knife in the bathroom," Danielle whispered, speaking more to herself.
"When he came back out of the bathroom, I thought it was a good thing he'd left the knife behind, or there would be another